KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Every year, hundreds of families adopt children who are very different from them, socially, politically, and economically. The premise of adopting is giving children a new life, but how important is it to preserve the cultural identity of the adopted children? I'm at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW, 800-289-5869, or write conversation at KUOW.org. Perhaps you have adopted a child of another race, another nationality, a very different culture than your own. Perhaps you were adopted by parents who come from a very different culture than yours. How important is keeping some of that child's culture of origin? 206-543-5869, 800-289-5869, or write to us, conversation at KUOW.org. G-Sun wrote to us when we put this question up on Facebook, if I had to pick a yes or no, I'd say no, because it is not realistic. What if an adoptive family do with the extended family, such as the adopted child's grandparents, ban them and rent ethnic ones for Lunar New Year? Wouldn't that really make the child feel more alien? Think about it, writes G-Sun. There's more to cultural identity than the external trappings. But the most commented on and liked comment we saw on Facebook was from Patty, who wrote, it's extremely important to do this in meaningful ways. The outer world will interact with them as a person from this culture. But most importantly, it honors who they are as a whole person. Joining us to kind of help guide our discussion, Spring Hecht, who's Social Services Director for the World Association for Children and Parents. And since 1976, they've placed over 10,000 children with adoptive parents. Hecht herself was adopted from Korea. We really appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
So you were just telling me before we started, you were adopted when you were 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And did your parents make an active effort to kind of connect you to your origins?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they absolutely did. You know, back in 1973, in those early years, we didn't know as much about adoption. And it has certainly evolved so much over the years. But even then, they were aware that it was important to expose these children, these babies, and as they were growing, to their birth culture. But basically what parents back then did and what my parents did is, you know, they were more like isolated events. You know, they encouraged parents to register their children for culture camps, they would call them, for adoptees, sign them up for some language classes. You know, I think if you can expose your child to their food of from their birth country, those kinds of things. But, you know, over the years, I think we've really learned so much. So I appreciate all of the things my parents did, but we now
more
know
to be
it's
done,
insufficient.
That's so the basic to do, but you need to do more than that.
Yes, absolutely. Like, so, you know, we're really fortunate. I can't wait to hear what some of the callers have to say. I think that we now have so many adult adoptees, and there's a rich body of research literature that has been conducted with adult adoptees. So they tell us what their experiences were like. They are able to share what helped them and what they wish there was more of as they were growing up. So now we know that really what's needed are lived experiences for adoptees. So that means conversations, role models, schools with a diverse population. That means seeking out maybe health professionals who are of their child's same ethnicity. So it's more normalizing it as opposed to, you know, these one-time isolated events.
You know, I thought Patty's comment was really interesting. The outer world will interact with them as a person from this culture. When you were growing up, when you were mm-hmm. a kid, did you feel as though people were interacting with you as though you were Korean?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I grew up here in North Seattle, but it was back in the days of mandatory busing. So from second through eighth grade, I was bused out to the Central District of Seattle to the schools, and they were very diverse ethnically and culturally. So all of the children viewed me as being an Asian American. But usually when I got comments on the playground or from school from children, it was, you know, oh, you're Chinese or something. So they saw me as Asian, but they usually got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can imagine was it's pretty confusing to a child who's only in second grade.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, were you clear enough to say, no, I'm not. I am Korean.
usually, and this is one of the things we've learned, is that I was unprepared for comments about race and ethnicity. I think my parents were trying to cultivate an appreciation for Korean culture. But what we know again now today is that parents really need to be having conversations to prepare their children, whether it's through role plays, stories, those kinds of things, to talk about race, racism, culture, and help them define these different terms.
You know, some good friends of mine adopted a child from China, and I got a chance to go over and for a play session with a number of other parents and their kids from China. Mm-hmm. And at one point, one of the children went up to the child of the friends of mine and said, I'm from China. And the little girl said, no, that can't be. I'm from China. So I'm kind of wondering, what kind of preparation do you give a kid to maybe face what you faced, that you're Asian, like to talk about with people when they're confronted with it?
Yeah, well, you know, things are so different, too, again, because there are many more children who have been adopted now, as you noted. You know, almost 500,000 children have been adopted internationally. And so, you know, in the Seattle area, you encounter so many multicultural, multiracial families, even that weren't through adoption. So, you know, I think that parents are proactive now about going into their children's classrooms, talking to the teachers, coming in and doing presentations on adoption and teaching those school children about their child's birth culture. And so these are all things that really help and will help the child, because, you know, I think it's important that we're clear that learning about culture for a child and race is one small piece of the identity formation process. And, you know, really there's the integration of the identity that includes birth family, you know, grief and loss. So it's really complex, and they say it's a lifelong process. But certainly there are things to do before your child's even pre-verbal, in terms of, again, surrounding your child with people of their own ethnicity and beginning those conversations and through visual, you know, aids, teaching their child about their culture.
Give us a call. Perhaps you've adopted a child from another culture. Perhaps you were adopted. And what's it like to growing up when you're growing up? What kind of cultural identification do you have? And how important it is to convey to the child what their original culture was, even if it's not yours. It's 206-543-5869, 800-289-5869. Or you can write to us, conversation at KUOW.org. We've got Peter on the line, and he's calling us today from Ballard. Peter, I understand you adopted a child from China?
That's correct.
And how are you approaching this question of how much cultural orientation you want to give to that child of his or her native culture?
We talked about it very freely, and it's always something that's always known. We don't try to hide it or anything like that. But my daughter is... She just has a difficult time dealing with other strangers, and she doesn't have an idea that she really wants to be involved with it. She almost kind of avoid it. We have to kind of force many of these cultural things on her, and sometimes to her, you know, significant discomfort. She cries and screams. We have a group of kids a group of other adoptees that we're involved with, and she doesn't really have any interest in any of them very much.
What a dilemma if she's pushing back. So do you feel as though you're going to have to keep trying to do that, even though she doesn't seem to care for it?
Yes, and I think your guest comment earlier about kind of pushing things a little more and doing it more in a private matter is our biggest option. To try to maybe do it in the house as much as we can. We're not Chinese. We have very little Chinese cultural experience. We enjoy, you know, going out and doing those things, but we're not, you know, the biggest source of it. And but trying to read up and do more things and kind of show her those things in our house makes her more comfortable. She's more comfortable with that rather than going out.
So it's like introducing her to other Chinese children, for example, where you're getting the pushback, not so much in the house?
Yeah, not in the house. Yeah, it's definitely going out and being with other people. Like she could never take a Chinese class, or, you know, she could barely go to soccer camp with total strangers. She can't do it, you know.
Right.
The Chinese part in being with strangers would be to take her over the edge.
Interesting. Hey, Peter, thanks a lot for sharing that story with us.
Yeah, thank you. And my point was just that each child is different, and some are more amenable to it and others are not.
So important to remember. All children are different. And we're talking about this generically, Spring Hecht, but of course kids are different. Some kids, like his child, might not want to be going to these events on the outside, might not want this culture kind of brought to them, being inculcated. What do you do in that situation? It sounds like they're going to keep trying to do it, but in the home. What's your advice?
Yeah, and I think that that's very wise of them to do as parents, to really be reading their child and observing their child's reactions. And we really, in our preparation and training of families at WACAP, we focus a lot on every child is different. So there are common themes in adoption, but there's different temperaments and different personalities that need to be taken into account. And so I think you want to let your child take the lead, but you really want to, I guess it's a dance that you do. There's a balance. You need to let your child know that you are open to this. So what I like the recommendation is that even if your child doesn't want to participate, you can send a message to your child and you can go out and participate in these things. You can seek out Chinese cultural events and those kinds of things. Well, if she wants to stay home with grandma, she can. But over the years, she'll realize that you're sending her this very positive message that you think her culture is something very special and important.
You know, in recent decades in this country, we have open adoptions. So you'll maintain a connection with the birth mother, maybe even also the birth father, and really kind of connect a great deal in these adoptive situations. Does that ever happen with foreign adoptions where you stay in touch with the birth mother in China, in Korea, in another nation?
That's a great question. So, there's usually it's more closed. And so more and more, for example, in Korea, I think Korea it's really sort of in the forefront in many respects. They're, one of the countries where we've had adoption for so many years. And so they now are, there's like a registry. So if you would like to do a search when you're 18, then you can contact your agency, and they have a post-adoption support center in Korea, and they will try to search out your birth family for you. But really, it's intended to be a go-between. So the birth family can go there, and they can file that they are trying to seek out their child as well. And so they will go through those steps, but it can be really difficult in these countries. And, in China, you're not supposed to at all, and in many of these countries. But in India, for example, we know that adoptees will go over to their orphanage, and they'll be assisted in trying to locate birth family. And we encourage it.
You were born in Korea, Spring. Did you ever want to do that?
I have. I think that most adopted person at some point in their life, if not at many points, is going to think about their birth family and seeking them out. And whether they actually do it is another thing. I think I'm very fortunate. I really am an advocate of having your child, or even as a young adult, go to their birth country. And I have been to Korea 2 times. And to me, it was a really profound experience. And, I had gone a bit again. Again, back in those days, you really had to be declared an orphan to be adopted internationally. And so there's really no information, and, they don't really encourage you to hire a private investigator or that kind of a thing. But there are people that do that. There are, those things exist. So if you're really determined, you can go on the internet and you can find information out. But I did go to the orphanage, or not to the orphanage, sorry, they were closed, but to Holt in Korea. But there was no information. So I think that that's each person's personal decision. And there's ways I think you can learn to reconcile that loss without being able to seek out birth family.
We're talking about cross-cultural adoptions. We're talking about largely in terms of foreign adoptions, but sometimes you can adopt a child in this country from a very different culture, from a different race, and what kind of issues that presents, particularly when it comes to wanting that child to have some connection to their birth culture. Let's go to Bruce, who's listening to us today in Ballard. Bruce, thanks for calling. What's been your experience?
Thank you. My son, 26, was adopted from India when he was 5.5 months old, and we introduced something kind of interesting that was very successful. He's somebody who's not had much interest in exploring the culture or going to India, but what we did was we introduced something called Airplane Day. So he had a birthday and an airplane day, and the airplane day was like the anniversary of the time that he arrived. And what it did was it enabled us to have a way when he was in school and preschool to have a celebration. And these celebrations would start, before he was verbal, and eventually he would be a part of going to an Indian section of town. This is down in California. buying Indian pastries, bringing the pastries, explaining what he knows about India and the culture to his classmates. And Airplane Day became this really, really important way for him to feel really positive and good about himself as an adopted, actually kind of special kid. You know, he had something special to offer, and it was a great way to integrate the adoption process and his awareness and self-awareness of where he came from.
Airplane Day, what a great idea. Bruce, thanks for telling us about it. Let's go over to Vashon Island, where we've got Karen on the line this afternoon. Karen, what's been your experience?
Well, just 2 years ago, I went back to my home country, and I met with my grandmother. And ever since then, we've been in touch pretty much every weekend, and it's been a really, truly a great experience for me.
And you were adopted from Bulgaria?
I right? was, yes.
Oh, okay. And you reconnected with your birth family?
Not everybody, just my birth grandmother. But everybody knows about me. Just right now, I'm just staying in contact with my birth grandmother. And if I could encourage anybody to have that experience and go back to their home country and meet with their birth families, for some it's difficult, but for me it was a great experience. And it's, yeah.
Well, as Spring was just telling us, that's not always possible. When you were growing up, Karen, did your adoptive parents try to tell you about Bulgaria, try to orient you to where you had come from?
Yes, absolutely. I was adopted as a teenager, so my family were really really positive about staying in touch with other Bulgarians and communicating with them and keeping up with the language and learning about the food and with the culture. So yeah, it was definitely a good experience, and my parents did a really good job enforcing that.
Karen, thanks a lot for your phone call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Kathy. We've got just about enough time for one more call. Kathy's listening to us today up on Capitol Hill. Kathy, what's been your experience in adopting children from another culture, and how much of that culture do you try to inform them with?
We have a son from Guatemala. He's 5 years old now, and we were really lucky to be able to place him at La Escuelita preschool, bilingual preschool, when he was 13 months old. And so he's had not only Spanish language access since that age, but he's also had this real attention in that school. They have great attention to social justice issues. So he has a really solid sense of himself as well as, you know, the language. We celebrate not Airplane Day, but we call it Gotcha Day.
And the day you got them?
Yeah, that's the day that we got him, and we became a forever family. And part of that celebration is talking about that we went to Guatemala to bring him home, and, you know, who his family was before we became a forever family and who his birth mother is. And so we just kind of have an ongoing conversation with him about, you know, about who he is, because obviously he looks very different from us. And at the point that he understands the genetic piece, you know, it's really obvious we're not genetically related.
Yeah.
Although I do have to say, I just had the most recently, somebody made a comment about that my son looks exactly like me when looking at his smile, and I think that's the nurture part.
Ah, there it goes. The nurturing, from there came the smile. Kathy, thank you so much for your phone call. And Spring Hecht from World Association for Children and Parents, thank you so much for stopping by. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
A lot of comments on our Facebook page. If you'd like to see what others had to say and add your own comment, if you weren't able to get on the air, it's conversation@kuow.org is our email address, or KUOW is The Conversation on Facebook. By David Hyde and Arwin Nix. Production help from Cameron Drews, and Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.